Two top law enforcement officials in the Biden administration earlier this year told Congress that white supremacist groups pose the country's most serious domestic national security threat. That assessment matches one from the McCain Institute for International Leadership and the Center for American Progress, which says, quote, violent white supremacists currently pose the single most lethal threat to American security, end quote. Brett Steele, Senior Director of Preventing Targeted Violence at the McCain Institute for International Leadership at ASU, helped write the report. She spoke with our co-host Mark Brody, who asked how we got here.
Well, so in part, that line in the op-ed reflects and mirrors the analysis of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. In fact, in October 2020, they decided that racially and ethnically motivated violent extremism, which white supremacy is certainly qualifies as, is the most persistent and lethal threat in the homeland. And so quite similar language there. How do we get here? White supremacy in the United States existed well before the nation's founding. However, the narrative and the political violence that emerged during the Reconstruction are most closely connected with what we see today. Today's white supremacist movement is largely rooted in the white genocide conspiracy theory, which warns that the white race is endangered by changing demographics.
There are a lot of people who will point to former President Trump as a reason why this movement has grown and maybe why some members of the white supremacist movement feel more comfortable being open and out in the open and doing the things that they're doing. How much do you look at the past administration, the former president, in all of this?
So this problem is much larger than any one individual. However, we did see white supremacist narratives and champions feature more prominently in mainstream discourse over the last several years. Researchers found that the 2016 election was associated with a surge in reported hate crimes across the country. And the area of greatest consensus across the 150 stakeholders we consulted in developing a policy blueprint to end white supremacist violence, their greatest recommendation and area of consensus was that the administration must speak out clearly and unambiguously against white supremacist violence. And that's something we didn't necessarily see during the last administration.
So let's talk about some of the policy recommendations that you came up with. And I'm curious, first off, how much of this problem can policy itself deal with? And how much of it is maybe more cultural, societal things, you know, things like you that you can't legislate?
That is an excellent question. And the reality is it takes a whole of society approach to tackle this problem. Our focus in building this policy blueprint was what can the federal government do, both the executive branch and the legislative branch. But you're right, there's a lot that needs to be done at the local level. Programs that need to be community designed, community led, and federal government can support those initiatives through funding, but we really need that community engagement in raising awareness, in dialogue, and in public health approaches to prevention as well.
Is it safe to say that it is easier to prevent somebody from falling into that than it is to try to pull them out?
Absolutely, no question.
So one of the recommendations in this report deals with making sure that technology companies take steps to stop white supremacists from using social media sites to plan and finance white supremacist violence events, things like that. What role do you think that tech companies should be playing? Like, what should they be doing here?
So it's important to realize that online spaces are where an awful lot of recruitment, planning, and financing of white supremacist activities take place. Tech community companies are currently taking some steps in the right direction, particularly after the attack on the Capitol on January 6th, but a lot more work remains to be done. Some of the recommendations we included in the report are asking tech companies to develop universal classification standards for hateful content. We also call for more transparent methods of content moderation and algorithmic recommendations by all the major tech platforms so that researchers can understand how are algorithms contributing to this challenge and what role can they play in mitigating this challenge as well.
Another pretty big section of this report focuses on countering recruitment and infiltration within military, law enforcement, veterans groups, organizations like that. How prevalent is that problem, and why do white supremacists seem to target these particular types of groups for recruitment?
So it's really hard to get reliable data regarding the prevalence of white supremacists within both the military and local and federal law enforcement. However, any form of insider threat poses a clear danger to local communities and to national security, and frankly, their fellow officers as well. One of the reasons why white supremacists target these groups for recruiting is due to their specialized training and tactical skills. If you want to create a race holy war, which is what some of these groups seek to do, you want people who are trained to fight. And that's why we see that recruitment of former military and law enforcement.
So you mentioned that this has been a problem basically forever here in the U.S. So given that, what does success look like in terms of if the federal government is able to do some or most or all of the things that you're recommending? And, you know, if some of the groups that are trying to pull people out of white supremacy are able to do that, like, what does success actually look like, given that this has been a problem 200 years in the making?
It's an excellent question. For me, success looks like resilience, that communities that are targeted for recruitment, that recruitment doesn't resonate, and individuals know where to go for support if they need it. There is much greater awareness, and we can really stop recruitment in its tracks and then offer support to individuals in these movements to support their disengagement, both from the movement, but more importantly, from the violence that these movements propagate.
All right, that is Brett Steele, Senior Director of Preventing Targeted Violence at the McCain Institute for International Leadership at ASU. Brett, thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.